Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. Happy New Year, everybody. My name is host Mike Jokum. Matt and Jess are with me for the first ever fan night. And I will turn it over to Matt to give a quick little intro and introduce our first guest, and we'll get the night started off.
Yeah, so we have a lot of amazing guests coming on tonight, fans of the show, fans of IndyCar, who are going to join us and kind of talk a little bit about themselves, and then they all got a topic that they're going to bring on and discuss with us. And the first one we got up here is none other than Patreon subscriber and all-around good guy, Michael Goodyear, who's at mgoodyear007 on social media. Thanks so much for joining us, Michael. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I'm actually calling in from Aruba. So normally I'd be in Virginia calling you guys, but down here in paradise.
That's some dedication. That's a dedicated fan there wanting to come on the show, even though he's in a paradise right now. So we appreciate that. So like I said, why don't you quickly kind of talk about how you became an IndyCar fan and what led to you loving the sport?
Well, to be honest, I started out a huge F1 fan, but like not recent F1. I was a big 80s, probably like Senna Prost era was really interesting for me. I used to scour YouTube to watch all the old like crappy quality YouTube videos, full race videos. And then I started to try to get into modern F1, but I just couldn't. Just couldn't find a driver to really attach to or anything. And so I sort of just gravitated to IndyCar after sort of seeing, whoa, they do a Grand Prix in Baltimore. Like that's right down the street. So let me go check this out. And since then I've been pretty obsessed.
That sounds like good times to me. Baltimore was always one of my favorite street races. And I was kind of same. I started out as NASCAR and then gravitated to IndyCar as well. So I think you ended up in the right spot there. So after all that said, what's the topic you want to discuss with us for tonight?
I wanted to talk about Juncos because I love to root for the underdogs. Those are always my favorites. I mean, it's always fun for me at least to see a new guy win or a new team win. But I feel like they're going about it in sort of the wrong way for next season from what I've been reading. And just that I feel like they should wait, maybe like take some time out, do this IMSA thing that they're going to do. They just unveiled their Cadillac DPI on Twitter today. It looks pretty awesome. But I feel like they should wait and like come up with one driver instead of trying to scrounge for funds and have sort of a revolving door type thing going on.
Fair point. I'll start and we'll make it a panel discussion about different Juncos things here. I think they were everybody's pick whenever Matt, Jess, and I talked about it for the team to regress the most in 2019. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know what they're doing with IndyCar right now. And it's you know, until they announce drivers, I guess we won't really know. But it's definitely an odd way to go about things. You know, we're coming up in you know, we're in 2019 now, and they have pretty much no idea who their drivers are going to be, which is worse than Dale Coyne's, you know, annual TBA for a couple of years, because that was always just one guy. This is, you know, potentially multiple guys or two cars, or we're going to run one car. I have my thoughts on who it's going to be, but I'll let Jess or Matt, you know, kind of give their thoughts before we go down that path.
Go ahead, Jess.
I'm not going to really comment, I think, so much on who I think it's going to be, but I think my comment with everything that's going on with them is just, for lack of a better way of putting it, they've got a lot of swimming pools and they're dipping their toe into a lot of pools when they should just focus on one. I feel like they've got too many things going on, and they're stretching themselves pretty thin, in my opinion.
Did you use a pool reference because one of our guests here is in tropical paradise? Is that why we made that?
Well, I am too. It's actually 80 in Florida right now.
Okay.
Still.
So. Bragging. So Goodyear, any idea, predictions on who do you think is going to end up in Juncos in the IndyCar program?
I mean, what I'd honestly like to see them do is they've got Rinus VK for the Indy Lights season. And after seeing him go through, it's not Pro Mazda anymore. What's it? Indy Pro 2000.
There you go.
He was killing it last season. And so I feel like they should wait, because, you know, I would bet on him even based on the tough competition from what I've seen in Indy Lights, to be a contender in the championship and see if he can, you know, come out of it with the scholarship money and just carry him into IndyCar maybe in 2020. That's what I'd like to see them do, and just maybe focus on IMSA this season and see what they can, you know, not stretch themselves too thin, as Jess said.
Yeah, to kind of sidetrack that off of that a little bit, with Rinus moving up to Yunkos's Indy Lights program, which didn't really have a good year last year, do you think he's kind of has an eye around the corner for their IndyCar program as well?
I mean, I would hope so. The guy just seems like really quick. But I mean, it remains to be seen. I guess Yunkos has won at least two Indy Lights championships, right? With Piggott and Kaiser, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I could see them doing it again. And he was quick at that Homestead test. I mean, they're going to have a pretty deep field, I feel like, this season. But I think they're going to be contenders. So I'd like to see them do that. I mean, I'd like to see Kaiser back in the seat, too, because I feel like he's got potential. But, you know, I know budget is hard.
Right. I bet. You know, you're a fan of the show. I bet our resident cheater is probably looking up Indy Lights champion teams right now.
I'm not, actually. honestly didn't even occur to me. I don't know why, but it did not even pop into my head.
Jess or Mike, do you have any Yunkos related questions or predictions you want to hear from Goodyear?
I have one. It's a prediction, and maybe we'll get Mike's input here. Not that any of us know much about him, but I know I cheated and looked up his stats a couple months ago. The Agustin Canapino, who dominated whatever the heck series he was in down in Argentina that I still can't figure out how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Everybody's raving about this kid. He's driven some Chevy cars down in Argentina, so he's got the Chevy connection. He's talked about as the young guy. I could see him maybe splitting some races with maybe him and Kyle Kaiser, and maybe Kaiser does the 500 and the Indy GP or something along those lines, and then maybe a third driver to fill out the grid. What do you think about? I know like us, you probably don't know too much about Canapino. Hopefully, I'm pronouncing his name right. I'm probably not.
That's right.
What do you think about that?
I think that'd be cool. I mean, just doing some research sort of into Rinus, he's got big sponsorship behind him. So I was just thinking like, wait for his, he's got some huge supermarket in the Netherlands behind him. That's like a 7 billion euro a year or something.
Are we talking about VK or Canapino?
Oh, VK. But I was thinking if they wait for him. But I mean, for this year. Canapino, I mean, I don't know. I know very little about him. I guess he was doing the stock car stuff or tin tops, but I mean, I could see that. Let's see how he does, I guess, at the Daytona, because he'll handle a little bit of the oval there, and he'll have the road course in a DPI, which all the drivers that sort of run IMSA say is it's not necessarily similar to IndyCar, but I guess if you can hold your own in IMSA, you might be able to transfer over some of that talent in IndyCar.
Yeah, totally fair. And to your point on VK, I think his dad owns, I think it's called Jumbo. I'm a Jumbo.
Yeah, Jumbo.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And they're on the side of all his cars going throughout the Road to Indy series. And his dad's super, super passionate dude, and wants to see his son continue up the ladder. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in IndyCar and see them throw some major money. I know they were supposed to expand. I actually met him at St. Pete last year, and he told me they were expanding into the U.S. or Canada or something at some point. So, I'll leave it at that. Is there any last minute Yunkos topics you want to bring up before we switch over to our next guest?
I really hope that they succeed. I don't want to see a team leave IndyCar, just the struggle for budget would be sad. It might be even better for them to sit it out. I'm no business guy, but whatever's the safe bet is probably what I would go for. But Ricardo Yunkos seems like just somebody who's willing to take risks, and that's probably what you need at the helm of your team, not me being like, oh, let's sit this season out and wait for some some money.
Definitely sounds about right with all his strange 2018 choices. Looking at you, Alfonso Solis. But with that, we are just about out of time on guest number one here. So Mike, thank you for joining and thanks for, you know, listening every week and, you know, chatting with us about IndyCar, and we will talk again soon.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming.
Here we are with our second guest, Mr. Jake Neely. You can find him on Twitter at IndyCarFan25. Jake, why don't you give everybody a quick introduction on your, you know, what got you into IndyCar, and then we'll bring up your topic.
Hi guys. I probably have the stupidest story for becoming an IndyCar fan. Just because basically, you know, it was my family was fans when I was younger. They took me out to the Speedway in Indy since we're from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And that's basically how I got hooked. Just speed, innovation, technology. I marvel at all of that. And here we are today. I'm a 24-year-old adult who's a huge IndyCar fan. So that's about what I got.
Very, very, very good. Not a dumb reason at all.
No.
Definitely fair. But and your topic for our you know, little segment here tonight is what?
The qualifying format of the Indianapolis 500.
All right. I love it. Definitely a hotly debated topic after last year. So I'll let you pose your question or topic, however you want to bring it up, and we'll debate it and try not to be too hard on you.
No, I don't. You guys would never do that.
No.
Well, basically, I don't think anyone likes the current format. I don't even know if the people who came up with the current format enjoy watching what's out there. But it was kind of obviously with diminished car count, what needed to be done was a change to what we were doing to get a better on-track product, and also for, you know, ABC needing to be in prime time, and also cutting James Hinchcliffe out of the Indianapolis 500 due to, you know, TV ending it at 550. So my idea, as we obviously see with greater car counts now, some people even saying upwards of 40 this year, so hopefully 38 to 40. I think that we need to make Sunday more of a traditional bump day, while keeping some of the new innovation of the Fast 9 around. So my idea, just kind of quickly, would be Saturday is pretty much what it is now. You know, you get the Fast 9. You also get people who don't make the 33 that day. Then when we get the Sunday, obviously the Fast 9 requalify, but 10 through 26 do not. And then the last two rows and anyone not in, re-qualify, you know, to get in the field or stay in the field. I believe that gives not only an incentive for people on Saturday to try and get in the Fast 9, but also an incentive to make that top 26 and not be in the last two rows. And it also gives us a much longer bump day and more opportunities. And the fact that you don't have to make a run on Saturday if you don't want to, and gives you the ability to just run Sunday if you're a lower budget team. Obviously, in the past, we've seen, you know, Buddy Lazier, who obviously, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm a huge fan of, gives them Saturday, you know, to prepare instead of getting out there, you know, Thursday to run some install laps, and then Friday they're trying to get up to speed. And if they don't qualify Saturday, well, then pack it up and you're going home. It gives them a practice Saturday morning and then any downtime Saturday, and then obviously the hour practice Sunday. And then the other day on Twitter, I saw someone mention what happens with exposure for all these cars that go home for new teams. With the new TV deal, I'm expecting, you know, TV coverage to be a lot better, whether it's through NBC Gold or even being on NBC Sports. I think a extended bump day gives the cars that end up not making it exposure on TV. Like we saw Hinchcliffe last year, and a lot of people claim Arrow's getting more exposure since he got bumped. Than not. Well, if you send some people, you know, packing after Saturday, they don't get seen at all on Sunday. And the way my format would have everyone running Saturday, making multiple runs to try and get in the top 26, or, you know, not be in the last two rows. Then you also see everyone back Sunday minus, yeah, I guess the, you know, middle of the field. But those people will be on race day. This format, I think, helps out the people who end up not making it. And the people at the back of the grid who, you know, the sponsors pony up last minute a lot of times, and the added exposure, you know, really helps them, even if they end up making it or not making it. So, you know, that's kind of my idea. Obviously, there'd have to be some time things worked out, but you know, it's light enough in Indiana, late enough at that time of year, you could definitely work out how it all works.
Jess, I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts on Jake's idea, and then Matt, and then I'll go.
So I've always been a traditionalist because I too grew up in Indiana, just actually about 30 minutes from the track. So I spent a lot of time there. I'm not sure I like locking in 10 through 26. I get the idea, but I don't know, because I feel like locking in 10 through 26 kind of screws those people over because they might be able to have a better run on Sunday, but I get where you're coming from. So it's kind of hard to decide whether I like it or not, but I think it's good letting the last two rows also qualify, just because I think that it would definitely create some more drama. And like you said, it would allow those people who have a low budget, you know, give them more of an opportunity to possibly make it work, or come up with something. You know, in years past, there have always been people show up right at the last minute with their helmet and they could jump in a car and throw it in the field. So I think that idea is very interesting. I'm just not sure about the 10 through 26 idea.
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. I like the idea of, kind of shifting things around. I definitely agree that Sunday should be the main focus, but I want to pose a question to you, Jake, because of course I have to give you some grief.
Always.
I'm going to play some devil's advocate here. Let's say, and obviously knock on wood, let's hope this doesn't happen. Let's say next year, Carlin and Ed Carpenter Racing and Harding Steinbrenner go belly up. And so next year we're down to 34 entries again. Don't you think IndyCar would kind of look a little foolish if they changed the format for 2019 and then immediately changed it back for 2020 again? Or do you think it should just go on a year-by-year basis? Or what do you think about that?
That's where, you know, I think any format we have is going to be a little sticky with the, obviously, the economic situation that we, you know, find ourselves in IndyCar today. Because I think if we keep the current format and, hey, we show up with 40 entries this May, well, it's going to look pretty dumb too.
That's true.
You're out after, I mean, that's going to be a packed Saturday, and then a Sunday is just kind of like ho-hum. but yeah, my idea was more, with 1 weekend of qualifying, I don't think there's really any perfect way to do it. And I think when you commit to something, you're probably going to look foolish regardless. Last year ending at 550, looked pretty stupid. If you ask me, and a lot of people would say the same thing, but they're doing what they have to do to get on, you know, network TV, and get the most people seeing them. So yeah, I don't think there's a perfect fix.
That's a completely fair answer. So, Mike, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know how about the 10 to 26 thing, although it is very interesting and not something I had thought of before. But I do like moving everything to Sunday in terms of, all right, who's, you know, 100% not making it, giving, you know, a Buddy Lazier type person, you know, an extra day to prepare in whatever way.
I swear I didn't pay Jake to come on here and bash Buddy Lazier. That was not my idea.
It's okay. We didn't make fun of him that much. but I think, you know, if we get more than 35 cars, I think they'll, you know, make a change for this year. But I think either way, if it's, you know, 35, 36, I think we're going to see the format again this year. And then, you know, maybe if you know, it's another frustrating day from a TV perspective, they'll make changes. But like Jake said at one point early on, you know, with NBC, you know, devoting, you know, more coverage to it now, you might see, you know, some popover on NBC Gold or NBC SN, or, you know, there's a lot more possibilities that ABC didn't really seem willing to entertain. So definitely more opportunity there. And an interesting discussion point that I think we should just talk about again at some point in terms of format. But with that, we are just about out of time for Jake's qualifying segment here. So, Mr. Neely, thank you very much for listening every week and chatting with us and joining us tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me on. You guys have made a great podcast out of something that started out, you know, pretty small with just a couple people having an idea. So, and it's grown into something pretty big. And, you know, it feels good to finally be on the show and be a part of it, especially being part of the Marco fan club.
Well, sir, we're going to stop you there after you said that, and have a wonderful night.
Thanks for joining us, Jake.
All right. Thank you. You guys too. Thanks.
And we're back with our next guest, Stephen King, not the author, as Mike always points out. His Twitter handle is at Stephen V. King. And Stephen, can you tell us just a little bit about how you got into IndyCar?
Yeah, pretty early stage. I think my story is fairly standard. My dad took me to the very first Indy that was in Vancouver. And just back then, there was like a lot less barriers between you and the cars. And so I was a young kid, straight up against the wall, and just watching these cars go around faster than anything I had seen was amazing to me. So I was hooked pretty quickly, and you know, went every year for as long as it was in Vancouver. And then continued on, and I live now down in California, and I go to all the Sonoma races and as much as I can.
Awesome. Very good.
So your topic tonight, Canada and IndyCar, I'm going to let you bring it up and whatever, and I won't make fun of anything Canada related until we are not recording anymore.
Okay.
I don't believe that, because I'm probably going to say out in a boot or something going A on there. So, but I'm used to it. It's okay. I thought, you know, I think IndyCar has a pretty special place in Canada, and vice versa. I think, you know, as far as I can remember, the crowds have always been super big and super enthusiastic, and it has a really big spot in Canadian hearts. And I think I wish that there was more more races, to be honest. I wish it was still able to go in Vancouver, but thanks to a bunch of, you know, buildings going up, it's not really feasible. But I'd love to see it maybe in Edmonton or in Calgary. And I was wondering what you guys thought. Is there a Canadian city you'd like to see it go to, just from like a, hey, I'd like to travel there, or maybe it might be fun?
I'll let Jeff start this one.
Well, I have been to Montreal, and the track there is absolutely fabulous. So I think that would be interesting. And as far as traveling there, I loved it. So I think, you know, the fans would have a lot to see and do. I am going to be honest, though, I'm not a cold weather fan, so I don't know a whole lot about Canada in general, because I like to go, you know, south. But no, I did love Montreal. I thought it was beautiful. So I think it would be interesting to see them there.
Matt?
Yeah, I'll echo what Jess said. As far as cities I've ever been to, Montreal is still number one on my list. A close second would probably be New York City and Manhattan. But I absolutely loved Montreal. And if IndyCar did go back to Montreal, because I did race there, I believe, 2 years, I would definitely be there in a heartbeat. I just think there's so much potential in Canada. And like you said, you know, if there is an event in Canada, people just show up, and it's amazing. And I think there's a lot of good places for IndyCar to explore. I really hope this Rick Peterson, James Hinchcliffe idea of bringing a race to Calgary happens. Are you originally from the Vancouver area?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Vancouver. So the idea of Calgary getting my favorite sport is very bitter to me, because we have that hockey, that hockey rivalry. But I know that they would definitely come out for that, having been there for a couple of like their stampedes and stuff. You know, they like to go hard, and they will cheer for anything. So,
and just for people who don't know at home, about how far of a drive is it from Vancouver to Calgary?
It depends on how fast you do it. I think it's like, I'm going to guess it's 18 hours, something like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's, people just don't understand how big Canada is. It's huge.
I thought he was going to say like 6 hours.
No, six hours doesn't even get you halfway through BC from Vancouver. It's a, yeah, it's like basically going from Seattle to Montana, something like that, if I make it states-wise.
Just massive. So yeah, I would go along the same boat with Jess and pick Montreal. So what do you think, Mike?
Yeah, Montreal will be a good one. Unlike you guys, I've never been there, although I am going there this year for a weekend. But I'm going to go with Calgary. I think Calgary would be a cool place to visit. Outside of Toronto, I've never been anywhere in Canada, and I do love the cold weather, so I know all the fun cities, well, mainly just from watching hockey. So I think Calgary would be cool. I heard, I don't know if it was Steven or somebody else saying on Twitter recently, the old Vancouver course, because of the Olympics a couple of years ago, is pretty much, you know, non-existent in terms of, you know, everything that they could have made out of it.
Yeah, well, the second one is is now where the Olympic Village is, okay. And is now condos and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of done.
That's a fair point. So I'm going to vote for Calgary just to be different. Although, I mean, really anywhere in Canada, Canadian fans are, you know, rabid for any sort of sport. I mean, even the, you know, CFL, which is kind of small down here. Now that I have some Canadian friends and, you know, we have some Canadian followers, I see them tweeting like about it like crazy. And, you know, obviously, you know, hockey is a pretty small sport up there. It's on TV 24/7, even in the summer, which amazed me the first time I went to Toronto back in 2011 or 2012, was they were talking about hockey on SportsCenter in the middle of July.
Yeah. Do I have time for a quick follow-up question for Steven?
Yeah, go right ahead. We've got a couple minutes still.
All right, perfect. So, Steven, all-time favorite Canadian IndyCar driver. Who do you got?
It's got to be Greg Moore. He was like, you know, some Canadians will say Gretzky and, you know, people in hockey, but for me, Greg Moore was kind of my idol growing up. Like, he was the guy sort of from my hometown that was doing what I wish I could do, but like there was no way I was ever going to be able to do it. And so, you know, just watching him come up through the ranks from the Atlantics and Indy Lights and stuff. He was by far my favorite.
Did you ever get to meet him?
I never got to meet him. Somewhere I've got pictures of me like waiting outside his his little, I guess, thing in the paddock, his tent, but never got to meet him, unfortunately. I think my dad gave up and got tired and wanted to go get a beer. So it's not that it was any of Greg's fault, but yeah.
I get it.
Gotta get a Molson.
Are we doing product plugs?
Listen, I'll always support Molson. That's a good beer.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It was a shame that they weren't able to sponsor those races anymore, because they would have gone on for forever.
Yeah. Laws, yeah. Government, you know the drill.
Yep. Government and tobacco and all that stuff. How different would our sport be if tobacco was still allowed?
Oh, man, that'd be a... Money. That's a 60-minute episode someday. I guess we'll try to bring you back on for that one.
Yeah, that's a good episode. That'd be a really good Patreon episode, too. So real quick, I'm going to do a second follow-up question here. And there's a little bit less of an option in terms of drivers. Pretty much, you know, Parker Thompson, Clement DeMello, maybe a handful of others that are, you know, young, up-and-coming Canadian drivers. If you had to pick one to be an IndyCar star, who would it be?
Ooh, now you're just going to make me have enemies, aren't you? On Twitter. I'm going to go with Nicholas Latifi. I'm going to go back to Europe, because I think when he's done his Formula 2 after 2019, I think he'll end up coming over to IndyCar. So that's although I would like to see Parker Thompson and Zachary DeMello make it to IndyCar, and, you know, the more the merrier. I think we should invade IndyCar and have it like half, instead of the Brazilian storm, like have it just be half Canadian. So it'd be awesome.
I wouldn't complain. Like, I like everybody up there. On that note.
And we like, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, we like we like coming down to the States and we enjoy our time, as Hinchcliffe and Wickens have shown, you know.
Yeah.
We enjoy it down here.
Yeah, we're a fun group. I mean, at least the three of us are. self-plug. With that, we will wrap up our segment here. Steven, thanks for subscribing on Patreon and listening and you know, all your input every week, and look forward to seeing you at some track in 2019.
Thank you very much for having me, and I think it's awesome that you guys are putting this out every week. It's really cool to have people just talk about IndyCar, so I'm happy to subscribe, and thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
One.
Our next guest is none other than Matt Gruenholtz. You can find him at his Twitter handle, Matthew Gruenholtz, and that's one T. Anything I've learned over the years is that if you spell his name with two T's, he will throw a brick at you. And for those who are very old to Twitter like myself, he is formerly known as IndyCar Stig, which is one of my all-time favorite nicknames, and just an all-around good dude. I've had the privilege of meeting him a couple times, so... thanks so much for joining us, Matt. Kind of dive in real quick and how you became a fan of IndyCar and what led you to kind of love this series as much as us three do.
Well, I would say that in the beginning, when I was born, let's fast forward like maybe like 4 years after that, I got a little Matchbox. My brother and I got a little Matchbox IndyCars, which did not look proportional to the real IndyCars, but I digress. They were still cool and watched it on TV, played with the little Matchbox cars while watching it on TV, and then fast forward however many years, going to IndyCar races, loving every minute of it, meeting new IndyCar fans and becoming more and more of a fan as time goes on.
And a big Scott Brayton guy, right?
I wasn't going to touch on that because a lot of people just automatically know I'm a Scott Brayton fan, so I was like, I won't touch on it just yet, but since you said that, yes, I am a huge Scott Brayton fan, have so much memorabilia. One of his last full-time racing suit from 1993, I have that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I've gotten offers like, how much are you selling it for? It's like,
not for
your
sale.
Kidney.
I think out of all the topics that we had pre-submitted to us, I think yours was probably the most interesting. So I'm going to actually kind of just let you go into your topic and discuss what you had come on here to discuss.
Okay. Basically, what I thought about is like all the drivers from Formula One, sports cars, whether it be IMSA, WEC, or whatever, and even NASCAR. Throughout the years, like back in the early days, you know, we had Hill, Jimmy Clark going to the 500 and being successful because they wanted the prestige. They loved the race. They wanted to win it, and they did. And then you had, like, fast forward, you had Emerson Fittipaldi, Villeneuve, Mansell Piquet, almost Senna, but I think that was mainly political, his test to get McLaren to do what he wanted them to do, or not. I don't know. I'm not him. But, you know, through the years, you know, you've seen so many people from Formula One come over, whether they're be at the end of their Formula One career and need some place to go, or they just want to come here and try it out. And I'm seeing a lot of that come back now. I mean, I don't think we really saw a lot of it in the mid to late 90s and 2000s. There's just, yeah, we don't have to go into that. Like, I'm not going to say the S word because I will have you edit that word out and bleep it. But now I've noticed this big movement of like Robert Wickens coming over and doing a phenomenal job. And maybe we'll see someone in sports cars like Ricky Taylor pop on over. Maybe. I mean, we'll have to see about that.
That would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if Jordan Taylor would. I mean, I'm sure he'd love to, but I don't think we're ready for that yet. IndyCar is definitely, I don't know, IndyCar, I mean, we've got characters like James Hinchcliffe and even like Robert Wickens. Jordan Taylor, I don't know if the IndyCar world is ready for that.
It would definitely be interesting.
Yeah, that's it. Putting it mildly, Mike. Yeah, not just like Formula One, like, and now Alonso Mania.
Yeah.
He ditches Monaco to come over here to race in the Indianapolis 500.
Which is cool.
Yeah. And now you see so many NASCAR stars like Kurt Busch, Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Jimmy Johnson showing interest. And Kurt came over and did the double, which was, he did a phenomenal job. To be honest, I wasn't 100% sure. I didn't think he was going to catch on the way he did. But what did he get, like sixth, I think? Something like that. Top 10.
I think he qualified ninth and started sixth, if I'm not mistaken, or qualified 10th-ish, maybe.
Are you cheating?
No, I'm not, but I'm about to. So continue, and I'll start cheating.
Okay, go right ahead and cheat. This isn't a trivia or anything, so it's all allowed. Kyle Larson, I think Kyle Larson will come over and do really well. Jimmy Johnson, he's not going to do the 500. We already know that. And then you have people like in 2001, Pablo Montoya winning the 500 and, of course, going to Formula One. And you had Tony Stewart going from running IndyCar to running NASCAR, doing the double. And now he's showing interest, great interest, semi-mild interest. I don't know where he's at right now with his mindset, but he was definitely showing interest within the past year. And now I've heard rumor that Robbie Gordon is showing definite interest in running the Indy 500. So add him to another list of drivers to be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to just give it another go.
Right. That'd be interesting too. So I guess, what do you kind of think as far as what that says about IndyCar and the Indy 500 as a whole?
I think especially over the past few years with the management of IndyCar and the direction it's been heading, more and more people from other series are showing more interest because they're taking it more and more seriously. In Jay Pryor, we trust.
Yeah.
So, I think that we're being taken more seriously. And that's what's bringing people more over.
Which is always a good thing. And shout out to Jay Fry. We can't go one episode without giving a shout out to Jay Fry.
No.
Jess, what are your kind of thoughts on what Matt's talking about?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, you have to look at all the different people who have come over in years past or, you know, who have started in IndyCar and then gone on to do great things in other series. It's just a great race. I mean, that's the 500 is just, you know, the epitome of what racing should be.
Yeah, I agree. And first off, I can't believe it's been almost 5 years since Kurt Busch qualified 12th for the Indy 500.
there we go.
Man, that was the best segue I think I've ever had in the 50-something episodes we've done. But I do agree, you know, especially with other guys, you know, showing interest, you know, like Matt said, in NASCAR and other forms of racing. And I think even sprint car driver Rico Abreu said something about the 500 at one point. And, you know, a bunch
he
of those.
Destroyed his name.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. What else? Abreu. Rico Abreu.
Yeah, you know what? He's not going to listen, so it's fine. you know, a couple of those other sprint car guys are all trying to get into, you know, the 500, you know, similar to Brian Clausen's path. So, right on. I think that's an outstanding point. And Kurt Busch did finish sixth in that 500 as well.
You can't even cheat, right?
No, I said he finished sixth. He qualified 12th.
You said he's fourth. We'll go back and listen. I don't think I said fourth.
I think you're wrong on that one.
All right.
With that, we will wrap up our next segment here. Matt, you know, again, thank you for, you know, listening and joining us tonight for your time and for listening every week. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you plenty as the season gets underway.
Thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. Love listening to you guys.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
And we are back with Mr. Sawyer Sparks. You can find him on Twitter at Sawyer_Sparks. Sawyer, how are you? And welcome to the show.
I'm great. Thank you guys so much for having me.
No problem. So Sawyer, why don't you start with, you know, your kind of, you know, introduction to IndyCar and how you became a fan, and then we'll dive into your topic.
My family has been going to the Indianapolis Speedway. I wish I had this wrote down, but for the last 50 some years. Wow. And I'm 31, getting ready to be 32 this month, and I've been to every race of my life, to the 500. I've been to every 500 of my life, and I've tried to make it almost every day throughout the month of May. My company, I used to own a gluten-free form of Play-Doh. We manufacture traditional Play-Doh, the traditional Play-Doh. And our company sponsored the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for a couple years as the kids club event, and trying to get more kids interested in the sport. And that's kind of like what my topic kind of goes on today, is like the topic of how the Speedway and how Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar markets their product. They do a great job in some ways, and other ways could improve. And I'm sure that's a great discussion we can dive into. One of the ways kind of targeting children and also, you know, families and adults. But definitely I feel always IndyCar lacks a way to engage the younger viewers. The children, like with NASCAR, for example, just a simple, the M&M car. And I know that's out of IndyCar's ability, you know, of a sponsor, but just like the M&M's car is very kid friendly, geared towards kids. NASCAR's even try to do things like Digger. If you guys ever remember Digger, yeah. I'm not a NASCAR fan, but you know, even Digger, I'm pretty sure Digger doesn't exist anymore, but he might've got ran over. But then going along on the adult side, another venture I'm in, I own a brewery, and so, you know, alcohol and, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway and IndyCar has had a great partnership throughout the years with, Fuzzy's Vodka. And it's terrible and sad to see that Fuzzy's is leaving. And hopefully there's something that can be put in place. And I think one conversation I've had, I think with Jess and Mike, before, is the restaurants and TVs. You know, I live in Indiana, and it's still so hard to find a place to watch the race, to get a place to turn a race on if I'm at B-Dubs or if I'm at any restaurant or bar. Even in Indianapolis, we took a group of friends years ago for the season finale, and they turned the race off halfway through the race. And, to put some, it wasn't even a, it was a tape recording of a hockey. I know you're a hockey fan, but it was a tape recording of a hockey. And, you know, just ways that they could market and reach out to, you know, those type of venues.
Matt, Jess, any thoughts?
It seems like a great place for that to kind of work would actually be, what's it called? Like the 1911 Sports Bar and Grill, the one that Sarah Fisher owns. Mm-hmm. That'd be like a great place to just be like a hangout and whatnot. And you know, for those who don't know, like, so Sawyer kind of mentioned earlier, he was on Shark Tank, the TV show. So I got to ask you, like, so if you were pitching the Indy 500 IndyCar restaurant to Mr. Smiley in the bunch, what do you think they would say?
Mr. Smiley.
I don't know. You know, yeah, I don't know. They would probably ask, you know, where's the money at, and why not Formula One?
They want 75% of the share.
They want 75%. Yeah, yeah. With me, it was 51%.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I agree with you though. Like, you know, I do one day a year, one Sunday a year, I actually go to B-Dubs to watch Buffalo Wild Wings, to watch the Bears game and kind of just take in the atmosphere and get some wings and kind of just be around other fans while the other games are going on. And to go to a bar to watch an IndyCar race in Indianapolis would be supremely cool. And if I was a resident of the area, I would definitely partake in that. So, Jess, do you got any thoughts?
I mean, you kind of talked about the kid aspect too. So is this going to have like a section that's going to be kid friendly? Let's say almost like a playground kind of thing with TVs in it too, or,
I mean,
you know,
I'm not necessarily,
you know,
like, yeah. Yeah. I'm not necessarily saying that there needs to be one bar. I feel like there needs to be a, established relationship with bars, with restaurants, with places, sports places that play other sports, to let those places know that the race is on. There needs to be possible incentive to play the race. You see that a lot of establishments already know when a race, or when certain other races like NASCAR is on TV. I understand we're not NASCAR. I understand we're not college football or NFL. But I feel like it's a partnership that could go down the line with a alcohol provider that could help them get into some of these sports bars, or a relationship with Buffalo Wild Wings, or something other than that. I mentioned the kid aspect too, you know, because that used to, I recently sold my business, my kid business. And I mentioned that because that is a way, you know, to get younger audience, to start them young, because that's what got me interested in the series. Is I was, you know, going to the race when I was a child. And one of the first, I know it was terrible, but one of the very first cars I remember was the Crest car. And yeah, I know, terrible driver, but that was one of the very, very first, because my parents would tell me to brush my teeth. And here I am, and I see a Crest car out there, and I'm like, oh, cool. All right.
That's fair. All right. Yeah, I think the you know, sports bar market is would be pretty cool, especially if you could get, you know, a sponsor or IndyCar, you know, not just Indiana, but other places, you know, right. In my case, Philly, you know, they say, hey, Buffalo Wild Wings, Philadelphia, you know, if you play the IndyCar race, you know, we'll work out some sort of incentive package or something. I don't know how that end works, because I'm not marketing or business, but it would be pretty cool to, you know, watch it at a bar. Although I do like watching it, the races I don't go to, on my couch in peace and quiet. But, you know, to have a couple drinks with, so, you know, a crowd of people and get them into racing, it would be a good way to do it, is to put it at, you know, some sort of sports bar type places. And there's sports bars that are popping up left and right near me. So I'd imagine it's the same near everybody talking tonight, not just the four of us right now. So I think you're onto something. I think we're going to have to find somebody in marketing and talk about what we can do.
Yeah.
Is there any other topic relating to marketing or things you would like to see before we wrap up our segment here?
I don't know. If you guys are open to any other marketing suggestions to talk, I mean, marketing, I enjoy it. I built a business from nothing to where we were the largest Play-Doh manufacturer in the United States before I sold it. And it was a time that people had no idea what gluten-free even was. So,
yeah, that's fair.
I enjoy talking about marketing ideas and such. And it's definitely a conversation that, you know, I'm not saying what IndyCar has done in the past isn't great or fantastic, because it is. What they've done in the years has been extremely improving. And I just hope that with the loss of a few sponsors that we can continue to build that momentum.
Yeah, very fair point there. And since we are about to wrap this up, Mr. Sparks, thank you very much for joining us tonight and listening every week. And I look forward to seeing you next May in Indianapolis.
Yeah, maybe I'll see you guys at St. Pete. I think I'll go to St. Pete.
I will see you there.
All right, we'll see you. All right. Sounds
Thanks
good.
A lot, man.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, and we are here with our next guest, Andrew Barker, and his Twitter handle is @F1Andrew. Andrew, how are you tonight? And welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. So just to start us off a little bit, can you tell us how you got into watching IndyCar?
Well, it's been, like I said, I've been watching it on and off for since about 93 when Nigel Mansell joined. I did obviously have an interest before that, but obviously the coverage in the UK wasn't that great at the time. And then obviously once Nigel Mansell joined, obviously I couldn't stop watching it then really. I just carried on watching it all the way through. And obviously, like I said, it's I've carried on continue watching it from then really, whenever I've been able to have continuous coverage in the UK. So I've been able to watch it all the time.
Perfect. And then it looks like you wanted to talk tonight about F1 drivers coming over to IndyCar. So we're going to turn it over to you. You're going to just tell us what you want to talk about and we'll go from there.
Yeah, obviously, there's been a lot recently about Formula One drivers coming over to IndyCar. And obviously, Marcus Ericsson's one. Obviously, Fernando Alonso is another. Like I said, obviously, to go on to Marcus Ericsson, he obviously joined a very good team for this season, for this upcoming season. And I think that, you know, he's got a lot to, a lot of pressure, I think, because looking at his Formula One career, he's not been the best car, don't get me wrong, but he's only scored, I think it was 18 points in 5 seasons. So, you know, I think it's going to be a fresh start in IndyCar, and, you know, he will be under pressure, especially on the road and street courses, to get to good results, you know, straight away, really, because obviously I'm sure the team will expect him to be very good on these kind of circuits, or learn very quickly, shall we say. But you see him on the social media, and he seems to be getting his head down. He wants to make it a success, and I think that's fantastic for him, really.
Yeah, I think that's
agreed. I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got to give him the chance, give him the opportunity. I think, obviously, like most European drivers, I think ovals will be a big issue to learn. But I think he may give him a race or two to get going, but he will have to definitely show how good he is on the road and street courses. There's absolutely no doubt about it, if he wants to make it into a success going forward, into like a longer career. Because even though he's Sauber's reserve driver, you can't see him ever getting back in there, back into Formula One that way. I'm sure he's bringing a budget to IndyCar for his drive, which is a good thing. But, you know, it might not last forever, but yes, have that opportunity, and hopefully he'll take it with both hands and he can be a success. And yeah, I'm looking forward to see how he gets on.
So yeah, I guess I'll go next. So as far as, I'm kind of looking at this year's grid as far as confirmed drivers. And so when we roll up to the 2019 Indy 500, out of the list of, we'll call it European products, so not necessarily F1, but just drivers who kind of tried their hand in Europe and then came back to America to race an IndyCar, we got guys like Max Chilton, Santino Ferrucci, Ed Jones, Fernando Alonso, Jordan King, Marcus Ericsson. All those guys have been entered into the Indy 500. You know, we still got to go through qualifying and all that good stuff. But of those kind of European products that I just mentioned, who do you think's got the best shot to do the best at Indy this year?
Fernando Alonso.
Do you think McLaren will do fine, even though they're technically don't have a team affiliation yet?
Yeah, definitely. I watched, obviously you've all watched the race, the Indy 500 when he was there, and he's like he'd be doing it all his life. He just sat in the car and drove. Obviously, he had lots of teammates, and you know, he had good information coming from Andretti and so on and so forth. But he just took to it. Like, you know, like I said, even like Mansell, like going back to Mansell's days, he took to it, especially the ovals. Like I said, he took to it, and he was superb. And it was a good story It was a great, good story all around. You know, he turned up. He was a kind of a success, and you know, it worked out for both. So that's why obviously he wants to go back again. So, you know, it's win-win really. But I think he will be again going to Indianapolis. He will be the man of.
Yeah, before I toss it to Mike, I think I would pick Erickson, to be honest, but I'm looking forward to watching him race. So, Mike, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Alonso unless, you know, Erickson comes out of the gate and kind of surprises us the first couple races of the year or the first couple Indy 500 practices. But I wouldn't be surprised if Matt was correct. Let's put it that way.
Jess?
I'm going to say Alonso, and I'm going to have to kind of just mirror what Andrew said. And, you know, he did so well in his first showing at the 500 that it's hard for me to ignore. So I think he's going to come back, and I think he's going to do really well again.
I think as well for Fernando as well, he's obviously now he's got a bit more time on his hands, shall we say, no Formula One commitments. you know, he may be in the simulator a bit more, integrate himself, may have a few secret test sessions on an oval somewhere out the way, you know, just so he can just keep his eye in, basically. Maybe even, I won't surprise me if he gets, you know, if the budget's right, he might get an odd drive at maybe Long Beach or something like that, maybe, you never know. Or even the Indianapolis road course, what they do—that's a possibility. That's what you know. That's what you know. He may have a secret up his sleeve, shall we say?
Yeah, I think the Indy GP would be a good place just to get some extra seat time. You know, being right before the Indy 500, yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
A natural fit, and then as far as logistically, I don't see it being too big of an issue for McLaren to pull off. Maybe just be between the road course and oval car. Maybe it'll be difficult for him, but. Yeah, it would make the most sense.
Yeah, and then obviously with McLaren, he's got a good team. Like I said, Bob Fernley's there now, so he knows what he's doing. And like I said, for him, he's got everything he needs. Everything he needs. He's got all the information he needs. And I think he's definitely, if everything works, works right, he's got to be one of the favourites to win the race.
For sure.
So I'm going to bring up a topic out of the blue here. Out of the, you know, F1 drivers who haven't quite made it to IndyCar yet that we've heard about, you know, we've heard Van Dorn, I believe Dale Coyne said he had talked to Esteban Ocon, and I think he also talked to Pascal. there we go. See, I stopped for a second and realized what I was doing. You know, out of those guys, who do you think, you know, could fill an IndyCar seat? Obviously, you know, probably not this year, but maybe in 2020 or onward.
Well, again, it depends on what they want to do. If they want to do a full season or just do the roads and street courses. I mean, you could even say, I read a story, Jenson Button would do the road and street courses as well. He said ovals are not his cup of tea. But, you know, again, you could say, well, why can't he do it? He'd do a job, if you know what I'm saying, to do a drive. But if you go back to your original question, your Van Dorn or Ocon or Maldonado, Van Dorn would be probably more than likely want to do the job. I think Ocon wants to be Formula One and Formula One only. That's what he wants to concentrate on.
Fair enough. Well, with that, we are just about out of time here. So, Andrew, thank you for joining us. I know it's probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning your time. thanks for staying up and hanging out with us for a couple minutes here and listening. And you look forward to talking to you more throughout the season.
Yeah, well, it's just soon as I say about 1:45 in the morning. So, but thank you very much for having me on. And it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now. Bye.
And last but not least, kind of like his Packers in the NFC North, who somehow didn't finish last, is our good friend David Lighting Jr. And you can find him at on social media at DLITE_47. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm a little hurt about that intro because I was going to congratulate both Matt and Mike on their teams making it to the playoffs, but I'm going to retract that statement for you now, Matt, just for that.
I didn't say anything.
I know. Matt, congratulations. I hope that Foles.
Hey, my team made it too.
Who's your team?
Colts.
The Colts.
Oh, well, you're in Florida now, so I don't know. I'm in Minnesota. I guess I can't really talk. But anyways, David, thanks for joining us. Early happy birthday tomorrow. Hope you have a good night, safe night. Get
home happy safe. Birthday, man.
Yeah, 4 hours away until I am a quarter century old.
Yeah, we're getting so old.
Stop. So
kind of talk to us about how you got into IndyCar and how you fell in love with the sport.
So I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin, about an hour south of Milwaukee, a little less than in Kenosha, Wisconsin. And being born in the 90s, grew up, you know, kind of in the quote-unquote heyday of kart. And both of my parents got into IndyCar racing really in the late 80s and early 90s. They had some friends that went down to IMS each year for the 500, but they never went down there. But they attended Milwaukee and Road America each year. So really from the year I was born, I went to Road America at the ripe age of 7 months old, and I've basically been to an IndyCar race every year since then. So I don't know, as far back as I can remember, I was playing with little cars on the carpet and trying to reenact the Miller Lite 250 or the Texaco Havoline 200 on my living room floor.
Awesome. All right. So why don't you take us into your topic that you selected for the night, and we'll kind of just throw it to you.
Cool. Yeah. So for the listeners that don't know, IndyCar is obviously one of my passions, but my other one is aviation. I work for a company that is focused on recreational aviation. I went to college for aviation. I have my pilot's license. So the topic I selected was how aviation and IndyCar are connected. I've always kind of known that the two had some sort of relationship just from things you hear on the radio or see on TV, but I actually wanted to do a little bit of research myself and see what I could find out. So some fun facts here. This is directly from the IMS archives through their museum and on their website. I think a lot of people know that the very first race held at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway was actually a hot air balloon race, I should say a gas-filled helium balloon race in 1909. There's actually 40,000 people that attended that first air balloon race. And Carl Fisher, when he designed, when he came up with the idea to create the speedway, he really wanted to have aviation as an integral part of the activities that would happen at the track. Because obviously, in the early 1900s, that's when aviation and the automobile industry was really booming all at the same time. So he saw it as an opportunity to try to incorporate, both industries into the facility. So, I always knew that balloon race had occurred there. I never knew much about it. It turns out there's actually 40,000 people that attended this balloon race. It was only 9 balloons, and the winning balloon was named University City, and it actually landed almost 400 miles away down in Alabama after more than a day in the air. So I can imagine that those 40,000 spectators just sat there and watched these 9 balloons take off and watched them go away. So it couldn't have been, to us that intriguing, but I'm sure at the time seeing, these 9 things float away was probably one of the coolest things in the world.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I know. Exactly. So, aviation really continued to kind of be a cornerstone of the speedway for the years to come. There was actually a week-long air display there in 1910. The Wright brothers were on hand to do some displays. Obviously, they were the first to fly a powered aircraft and things like that. So pretty cool stuff. When the U.S. entered World War I, the Speedway actually served as an aviation fuel depot from 1917 to 1918. And people who are very familiar with the race know that the 500 did not happen during those years. So they actually used the track as an aviation testing ground. for military aircraft. They used the infield of the speedway as the runway, and there was barracks for servicemen located just outside the track, right there in Speedway, Indiana. So kind of cool that, you know, it's used now as the airport for the Red Bull Air Races, but it was also used as an airport 100 years ago. So kind of a fun fact that not many people know about the speedway, I bet. Balloon races took place all the way through the 20s, really. Those were actually the last aviation events that took place until the Red Bull Air Races returned. However, I'm sure a lot of IndyCar fans or race fans are familiar with the name Eddie Rickenbacker. He was a World War I ace, pilot in World War I, and also a driver in the Indianapolis 500. There is a book that chronicles his life that I highly recommend. I don't have it in front of me, so I can't remember the name of it, but he was a part of the ownership group that bought the Speedway in 1927 and was a part of that ownership group basically up until World War II. During that time period, though, the race saw, you know, vast growth in popularity. Well, being that it was the 1920s, there wasn't that many, you know, inroads to the Speedway. If you attend the race now, you still know that it's not the easiest place to get to on race day, being in the heart of Speedway, Indiana. But interestingly enough, I'm sure everyone has seen the executive helicopters coming and going from, you know, just outside the track on race day, dropping off the, you know, the big wigs and the sponsors and stuff like that. Well, in the 20s, since the area surrounding the Speedway was very underdeveloped, there was a lot more people that were starting to get their own personal aircraft. And because of all the traffic jams, a lot of the spectators began just flying their own airplane into a field just north of the track. It's a neighborhood now, but back in the 20s and 30s, it was just an open field. So there was people that were flying their airplanes to come watch the 500. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So, leading up to World War II, Eddie Rickenbacker, again, he was still the part of the ownership group. He offered IMS yet again to be part of a government aviation facility, but the government declined because of just the technological advances of the aircraft. They were faster, bigger, needed more space to take off and land. So, of course, the track then shut down for a couple of years during World War II. So that... that's kind of the end of the aviation tie into the Speedway. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that topic, but I have a few more things that I'm happy to share.
Well, I guess my like question would be like, how did you learn all that?
Simple Google search, Matt.
Oh, sorry. I guess I'm lacking there.
No, actually, when the Red Bull Air Races returned to the Speedway back in 2016. The Speedway put out some information on the kind of chronicling the history of aviation at the racetrack. So I can't remember who actually published it, but if you just go to the IMS website, you can find some of that information there.
I tried to Google Indy 500 or IMS and, you know, the history of aerospace, and somehow ended up Googling the NFC North standings. I don't know how that happened. Jess, you got any thoughts on that?
I think it's all very fascinating. And frankly, I'm going to send you a message next time it's my turn to do Stump the Host. Just saying.
Fair enough.
I've been sitting here for 10 minutes trying to figure out how I can compare NASCAR and the first balloon race that ended up in Alabama. But... I don't have anything good.
There was probably as much passing in the balloon race as there is a typical NASCAR race.
Ooh. There you go. Good one.
Ooh, I like it. Yeah.
I missed it.
Man, that was a good one. Yeah. Thank you for subscribing. And for those who don't want to listen to David join us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/pitlaneparlay. Everything's there that we've ever posted, a couple special episodes and bloopers and me messing up people's names, and I don't know what else is on there anymore. So why don't I have one random question, David? And it's
I got one too.
It's a total just not that it'll ever really happen, but if you had to pick one IndyCar, current IndyCar driver to become a fighter pilot, who would it be?
Zach Veach, no question. So,
and why?
So, fun fact about Zach Veach, a lot of people don't know this. He was actually learning to fly when he was first driving Indy Lights. I met him at Milwaukee in, I think, 14 or 15, and got talking to him, and he was completely like enamored with the idea of learning to fly. But obviously, you know, commitments with IndyCar and everything continue to grow, and he didn't have as much time to spend in the airplane. But not only that, but dude's also got the perfect build to be a fighter pilot. He's small, he's strong, he'd fit perfect in the cockpit. Like, he's got, you know, he'll make some bold moves. So I think Beach would make the perfect fighter pilot.
Go ahead, Matt.
Well, this one's not racing, and I keep bagging on the Packers, but you had tweeted us today about the Pit Lane Parlay Bowl, which I think is in reference to Sunday. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, we need a prediction. Who do you think is going to win, the Eagles or the Bears? And just for those who don't know, I'm a huge Bears fan, and Mike is a huge Eagles fan.
And I'm a huge Packers fan. So,
aww, that's cute.
As much as Mike, I'm sorry, as much as this pains me, you know.
It's okay.
I think it's going to be tough for the Eagles to put up more than 13 points. And I think the Bears are going to put up 20 or 21. So I'm going to say 20 to 13, Chicago.
So you think the Chicago Bears will win? Can you say that full sentence?
Yes. I think the Chicago Bears will win on Sunday.
That is going to be my new ringtone on my phone.
And when the Chicago Bears, travel to Los Angeles, California for the divisional round, they will also win that game.
Ooh, wow. That will be a little tougher, but
I don't think so.
Anyways, we digress. But yeah, like I said, I hope you have a good birthday tomorrow, and you know, we really appreciate you coming on. And really, that was a really fine education that we got there. That's a lot of stuff I didn't know. I don't know about the other two, but that was really awesome. So I appreciate that. And
it probably doesn't hold a candle to the number of like horse posts that there were. So I don't know if I can beat that, but yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, and yeah, thank you again for listening every week, and I guess I hope everybody enjoyed Fan Night. I'm sure at some point again we'll do this in the future. And I guys, I think that's it for the night. So Jess, feel free to sign us off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios and produced by Podcast Delay Productions. Web design courtesy of A30.com.